Warning, this podcast contains language that would make the baby Jesus cry.
Today's episode of The Scathing Atheist is brought to you by the new terrorist surplus outlet, G Hobby Lobby. Come on into a branch near you for all your plastic explosives and multicolor wire needs. Mention this ad and get half off of those big red digital countdown displays Hollywood directors seem to think people actually put on bombs. And now, The Scathing Atheist.
I don't want to support lesbianism. I don't want to support Planned Parenthood, and I don't want to support abortion. And if that be the case, I'm not buying Girl Scout cookies.
This is Sam Sonsting from the People Against Personal Promotion, ensuring you that we did in fact evolve from filthy monkey men.
Thursday.
It's Halloween.
And it looks like a whole bunch of chickens had abortions last night.
I'm Noah Illusions.
I'm Heath Enright.
And from scantily clad New York, New York, this is The Scathing Atheist.
On this week's episode, we'll remind you in advance that deaf people can't hear the jokes we make about them.
We'll be one of six programs released today that doesn't use any crappy Halloween puns.
And we'll delve elbow deep into the gayest book of the Bible so far.
But first, the diatribe. I actually really like to argue online. It's a largely pointless guilty pleasure, and I know that people who post, like, Answered in Genesis-inspired memes aren't doing so in hopes of opening an earnest discussion about faith and philosophy, but I still love to do it. Now, I should point out right up front that I'm talking about arguing, not debating. If somebody does want to have that genuine discussion about their beliefs, that's great, but I'm not your man. Debate is important, and I believe it's a vital form of atheist outreach, and I entrust it to people with more experience and more patience than myself. But when it comes to a knockdown, drag-out, fuck-you, no-fuck-you argument, not to pat my own back or anything, but that's kind of where I shine. So the other day I'm surfing through a number of atheism pages on Facebook looking for some troll to crush, and I come across one of the stupidest syllogisms ever offered in this or any other debate. As I marveled at the stupidity it took to construct the heresy against reason I was looking at, I tried to catalog everything that made it wrong, but it seemed like I would need some kind of a formula or a three-dimensional chart or something. So here it is in all its stupid glory. Premise 1. Any position which is unfalsifiable is unscientific. All right, so far so good. Premise 2, and here's where it goes off the rails, atheism is unfalsifiable. Yeah, we'll get to that. We'll get to that, I promise. Conclusion. Therefore, atheism is unscientific. Okay, so where to even start, right? Now, before we get to the reason I'm bringing this out, let me just take care of one of the fatal flaws. Atheism is not a claim. It's a rejection of a claim. Egg salad isn't falsifiable, and yet it exists. Atheism doesn't make claims, it just rejects really stupid ones that don't have sufficient supporting evidence. So there's that. But the far more glaring error here is the inability of these theist debaters to recognize the whole meaning of the term falsifiability. Let's pretend for the moment that atheism is me saying there definitely isn't a God. That's not what atheism is, but for the moment, let's pretend it is. If you substitute almost any other word for God, it becomes painfully obvious how incredibly falsifiable this statement is. If I say there definitely isn't Cinnamon Toast Crunch, you can automatically think of a way to falsify it, right? You see them making this same stupid mistake when they talk about evolution. Of course, you and I know all about rabbits in the Cambrian and whatnot, but you still hear these foaming-at-the-mouth intellectual bodyguards for Jesus claiming that evolution isn't falsifiable. The problem is a complete recognition of what science means about falsifiability. We're talking about the intrinsic quality of falsifiability, theoretical falsifiability. They're talking about the ability to prove it wrong. What they're actually saying is, evolution isn't scientific, or atheism isn't scientific, because I can't prove it wrong. They don't seem to realize that the inability to falsify a theoretically falsifiable statement is the closest damn thing there can possibly be to proof that it is correct. They're mistaking falsifiable for falsified. Yes, you can't falsify evolution because it's fucking correct. You also can't falsify atheism because there's no fucking God, but if there was, you could just show him to me and bam, it's falsified. But yet people have been looking for this elusive bastard for tens of thousands of years, at least, and still not one shred of credible evidence has arisen to help them out. And they're trying to act like this fatal flaw somehow bolsters their claim. And as asinine as it seemed to me when I saw it, I guess it really shouldn't have surprised me at all that the people in the invisible man in another dimension whose ways are too mysterious for you to comprehend camp are fuzzy on the concept of falsifiability, right?
They're talking about your Jesus.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Joining me for headlines tonight is racist satire aficionado Heath Enright. Heath, which do you prefer, Asians or whites?
All right, I'm glad you asked. I'm going to go with Asians. In particular, I'm uncomfortable with anyone who has Lee in their name that isn't Asian. Mm-hmm. Lee Iacocca, Lee Harvey Oswald, Robert E. Lee. Nothing but trouble.
Well, wait a minute. I don't know if I agree with that. Ang Lee pisses me off and he's Asian.
Fair enough. In our lead story tonight, the Good Old Boy Network that runs the lucrative South Carolina Christian Soup Kitchen sector continues to thwart the existence of secular morality by refusing to employ volunteer atheist ladlers. And in Onion Headline, French Onion Headline form, Stewish Mafia Godfather refuses atheist request even on this, the day of his daughter's Italian wedding.
Yeah, so here's the story. They won't allow atheists to ladle soup, and then they fault atheists for not doing enough charity work. It's like justifying an invasion because the country had weapons of mass destruction after spending decades selling them weapons of mass destruction.
Awful idea.
You'd have to be an idiot to do that or vote for someone who had.
All right, let's get straight to it. Lightning round, 15 seconds on the clock. Blah, blah, blah. Religion brand soups, go.
Oh, shit. Jucumber soup. No, wait, that would just be matzo ball soup. So.
All right, schismed pea with ham, or wait, crock of shit pea with ham.
No, we can't do beans and pasta, because God hates fagioli.
That's mean. All right, some Asian flavor, maybe? Shark of the Covenant, Finn?
Oh, I got one. How about cream of altar boy? Wow. Known to our Scottish listeners as kakaliki.
They really have a soup called kakaliki. Fucking Scottish people. All right, maybe some atheist brands. Manhattan Scam Doubter.
Oh, nice, nice.
Nietzsche Soaz, which could also be a church one. You know, they
goes
boil
both ways. Maybe Booyah Basic Logic.
Christianity, Booyah based on a Jew story. All right, well, not sure if this one fits, but atheist stem cell researchers call their inputs egg drop soup. Does that count? Is that a good one for the egg drop soup image? Bloody.
And
then
did I mention I'm a Monday through Friday Adventist news tonight? Christian egotist and person whose name is too goofy for a character in Hunger Games, Celestina Mba, is suing for the right of all religious people to have days off whenever God tells them to.
But rabbis work every Saturday,
yeah,
and priests work every Sunday. Religion's entire corporate structure breaks that rule every week. What the fuck?
Right. And yet, this woman was fired from her job after refusing to work Sundays after extreme poverty left her apparently unable to buy a vowel. Mba sued.
Not too many black women with MBA at the end of their name. Weird.
Oh, shit.
Overachiever.
The court ruled on the side of fucking off, pointing out that fucking off was also against her religion. She appealed the verdict and now seeks to take it to a higher court.
And then she plans on suing the NFL for refusing to hire Christians.
Right.
I hope they schedule all her court appearances on Sundays for secular spite. Fuck you.
I love it. Invoking the bafflingly common Christian mantra of treating everyone the same discriminates against Christians, an attorney working on MBA Mba's behalf points out the court allows people to wear religious bracelets and have religious haircuts. So how is this any different than this almost completely unrelated issue?
That's literally part of their argument, by the
way. Yeah.
If black people get cornrows, we get Sundays off. It's fucking only fair.
She actually said that.
Actually say that, indeed. Okay, moving on. From the Ears in Heaven, Hell in Keller file, Pat Robertson explains that being deaf is your mother's fault. Faith healing is like Santa Claus, and only God can heal people. Also, Pat Robertson can heal people.
And barring that, he can say shit that'll make you perfectly fine with being deaf.
Indeed. This particular tribute to religion and senility began when the mother of a deaf person asked why prayer wasn't restoring function to the dead axons and dendrites in her son's ears. Robertson, chief auditory neurologist of the 700 Club, explained that deaf people's prayers tend to be badly enunciated. It's a big problem. But if the speech-capable mother was praying too, she must be holding the wand wrong or something.
Right, or improperly arranging the entrails before the bloody altar. Or maybe she forgot to click her heels together three times.
It's important to read the whole recipe. Although my first instinct tells me she must have forgot to rebuke the spirit of deafness in this particular case. Robertson actually agreed, saying, quote, I have dealt with people who are deaf, and you rebuke the spirit of deafness, and they get healed. So I don't know what you're doing wrong, lady. End quote. You gotta really rebuke it nice and loud. She probably didn't rebuke it loud enough.
This fucking animated cadaver is like an endless pipeline of crazy. Every week it's something even more insultingly stupid than the last week. Now he's claiming that not only can he heal deaf people with a magical incantation, but that it has such a high success rate that he's literally baffled when someone else is unable to do it. We're talking about a Jesus-level miracle, and he's acting like this woman can't reset the time on her phone.
Yeah, he sets the decibel bar pretty high.
Fuck. And in the pubic defender file tonight, I was ecstatic this week to find the following headline and subsequent news item was not from a satire site.
It's real.
British taxpayers foot £350,000 legal bill for Muslim pubic hair battle.
£350,000?
Yeah, right?
That is a lot of pubes.
The story centers around a mentally disabled 30-year-old woman and her parents' 2-year battle to shave her pubes.
Well, we Americans wasted a lot more money than that on our retarded bush problem. So I got to give the UK a pass here. $350,000 is pretty much nothing.
Nice. Way better dig at W than mine. Well done. So apparently Muslim tradition requires that women shave their pubes, which shouldn't surprise anybody who knows anything about Muhammad's child-fucking proclivities. But since their severely handicapped daughter isn't under their care and the person who is caring for her is a bit uncomfortable about the idea of two adults she doesn't know making aesthetic changes to her genital region, they take it to court.
But isn't this just a simple case of what man owns her? That would settle everything?
Well, now we'll never know, because days before the scheduled hearing, after hundreds of thousands of pounds had been spent preparing the case, the parents unexpectedly dropped the suit, leading to one of the greatest understatements in judicial history. Justice Roderick Wood pointed out that, quote, there are many competing cases of equal, if not greater, urgency than this one.
Yeah, there's this Orthodox Jew with Tourette's who wants to bleach her asshole. We gotta make room in the court docket. Jesus. Okay, quickly moving on. And in what's the worst that could... Hold on. Not moving on yet. How did we do an entire story about religious people and their pubes without a single Occam's razor joke in there?
Oh, no shit, dude. We must be losing our edge.
Yeah.
Shit, I guess that lame joke there is Exhibit B. My bad. Fuck.
Okay, seriously moving on this time, and in what's the worst that could happen news, a 12-year-old girl hanged herself to death to be with her dead father in heaven, only to find out she forgot to read the fine print about suicide, and now she's either in hell or just normal secular dead.
Friend of the show Eli Bosnick posted this story on his Facebook wall, and some Christian asshat comes back and says, well, if somebody had told her suicide was a mortal sin, this never would have happened. Yeah, because, yeah, that's where this thing went wrong. But Eli posed the right question. Like, if you honestly think she's in heaven right now, didn't she do the right thing? And if you honestly think that God would stick this little girl in hell, why the fuck would you praise him?
And I think this all teaches us an important lesson that every parent needs to know. It's bad to kill your children with lies, and it's bad to kill them with truths.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah, Laxap's Wager tells us that even if you believe in the afterlife, you might as well teach your children about reality just to be sure they don't hang themselves. Decomposing in a box next to daddy isn't nearly as glamorous as the express escalator to heaven like they were teaching her.
Man, am I glad that story's over. And finally tonight, in the We Put the Organ in Organic file, a website that doesn't remotely seem like a credible news source is reporting that the Hasidic Yeshiva of Gur has banned students from eating soy-based products, fearing soy might lead to gay sex.
Fossilized human remains in Asia do show that people were using edamame as anal beads, or possibly just eating edamame, one way or the other. Jew rules about gays are not an exact science. They just kind of spray at the wall and see what sticks. It's their mode.
Officials at the school warn that even one soy-based product a week can lead to unwanted arousal, which goes a long way towards explaining Japanese porn. They warn that soy contains magical circle jerk hormones, I do believe.
And this is all true if graded on a Hasidic rabbi bullshit.
Right.
So keep that in mind.
Well, that's going to do it for headlines tonight. Heath, thanks as always.
Glad to be here. This nihilism is getting exhausting.
Nice. And when we come back, Lucinda will join us in wishing the God-appreciated word economy. As I'm reading through 1 Samuel, the whole time I'm thinking to myself, man, this is going to make for a really easy poem to write. It tells a linear story. It makes sense more or less. There's this great cornucopia of characters. A lot of shit rhymes with Sam. So I guess it shouldn't have come as much of a surprise to me that somebody had already written a perfectly good poem about this particular book of the Bible, and far be it from me to try to outdo a master of the poetic arts. So with apologies to the audience and the original author, I present to you 1 Samuel in rhyme. I am Sam. Sam, I am. That Sam I am, that Sam I am. Do you like the Philistines? I do not like those Philistines, for God has said they are unclean. I want to do things really mean to every single Philistine. Would you like them here or there? I would not like them here or there. I would not like them anywhere. I thought that God had made it clear we should take to them the sword and spear. We should slaughter each one like a lamb, because I do not like them, Sam, I am. Would you like them in a house? We should burn them in their house. We should plague them with a mouse. We should kill each child and spouse and treat them like a pubic louse. We should catch their sheep and goats, kill their herds and burn their boats. We should do what God denotes and slit their motherfucking throats. I do not give a tinker's damn. I just don't like them, Sam I am. Would you like them in a box? Well, sure, as long as that thing locks. Plague them with a burning pox. Feed them to a hungry fox with their normal human uncut cocks. Would you like them in a van? Am I mincing words here, man? I would not like them in a van. I would not like them with a fan. I despise each member of their clan. I would not like them in a house. I would not like them in a mouse. I would not like them with a fox. I would not like them wearing socks. I would not like them in the night. I would not like them in the light. In no death would I find more delight. Except for those Amalekites.
The Holy Babel.
By far the most interesting book so far in the Bible, 1 Samuel employs things like wordplay, foreshadowing, story arc.
Gay sex.
Yeah, right, in a way that's been lacking since the last few chapters of Genesis. And while the story is still horrible and largely immoral, it's a much better read than the shit we've been wading through up to this point.
Yeah, against all odds, they managed to limbo right under the St. Louis Gateway Arch.
So to help us break down yet another 66th of this book is my lovely wife, Lucinda. Lucinda, welcome back.
Hiya.
All right, so why don't you start us off with, let's say, chapter 1.
All right. First, we meet Hannah, whose husband Elkanah preferred her to his other wife, even though his other wife had kids.
Right, so she prays to God to have a son because, you know, fuck daughters, and promises if God will grant her a son, she'll give him to the priesthood. So basically, she wanted all the fun of childbirth without the tedium of having an offspring.
Right, so God does and she does, and this kid is the titular Samuel. So little Sammy ends up ministering with Phinehas and Ferb, the sons of Eli.
Phinehas and Hophni.
That's what I said. Anyway, these guys are really shitty priests, and they abuse their power, and God's only willing to overlook that kind of shit for so long.
At least 1 century in the case of Catholic pedophiles.
Oh, shit.
What's the point of running a tabernacle anyway if you can't fuck the sluts that work the front door, right? So he, like, gets all mad, yells at his sons. You know, this is not a restaurant. You don't fuck the barely legal hostesses.
Oh.
What did we just talk about?
Then the Philistines show up and attack because that's what Philistines do. The Jews get their asses kicked and they're all like, hey, why do you reckon God would have let them kick our asses like that?
So to find out, they order that the Ark of the Covenant be brought to the battlefield so they could walkie-talkie heaven for help, I guess. But the Philistines just say, hey, look, it's a box with God in it. Kill them and take it. And then do. Kill them and take it.
So the Philistines take the Ark to Ashdod, and they put it in the temple next to a statue of their god. Real God decapitates the statue, gives him some cancer, and, you know, normal God stuff.
So the Philistines call up the Jews and say, here, take your fucking box back already. This shit sucks.
And then it gets interesting, because the Jews won't just take it back. They start going all knights that say neek on them, and they say, I shit you not. Okay, but in order to lift the curse here, we're going to need 5 golden mice.
What?
And 5 golden tumors.
Great.
Fucking tumors.
And not too expensive, but the following items must be covered in gold. We want 5 gilded lilies. Shit, no, that feels like a mistake. 5 mice and 5 malignant tumors this time, you fucking cheaters.
Then they get the Ark back and everyone rejoices.
Then all the people show up begging Samuel to appoint a king, because you know how people are always wanting to be ruled over by tyrants. So
now we meet Saul, who is supremely qualified to be king since he's both handsome and tall.
I've always said I'd rule the Jews really well, you know? I'm at least half qualified.
That you are.
Halfway there.
So Saul is wandering around all of Israel looking for his dad's donkeys when he runs into Samuel. He makes him king in full-blown Kung Fu Panda style, I might add.
I guess the king of Israel can't find his ass with both hands joke is too easy, huh?
And this chapter gets pretty gay pretty
yes.
fast. Yeah. It starts yeah. out with Samuel pouring oil on Saul while they make out. So pretty gay right there. Then Samuel tells Saul to go meet two men in a graveyard who will give up those asses he's been searching for. Just say, I'm Saul, and I'm here to trap that ass. Then it ends with Saul's disappointed dad saying, what shall I do about my son? So, you know, just another gay in life.
Meanwhile, there was an evil Ammonite king that was gouging out the right eye of all the Reubenites and Gadites for some reason.
Then the Ammonite king attacks Jabesh Gilead, that bastard. Remember Jabesh Gilead. And the people try to make peace with him, and they say, okay, evil king, what are your terms? And he replies, I want to poke out all your right eyes. That's just kind of my thing. That's what I do. So the Jews say, you know what, give us a week to think on that. We'll get back to you.
You said right eyes? Okay, that's weird. Let me talk to my guys. I'll get back to you.
And when Saul hears about this, he gets so pissed, he hacks up his oxen and then mails chunks of them around the country because, as we've seen before, chopped up bits of dead things sent UPS is the best way to rally the Jews.
Apparently.
Some of the Jews must have gotten the package late, though, right? I mean, guy walks into the kitchen with his right eye in his hand. Honey, did you forget to give me this decomposing hoof we got in the mail yesterday? Because I could have sworn we all agreed to the gouge thing, and here I can plainly half see that you still have both your eyes. Kind of an important message. And in chapter 15, God puts that whole all-knowing thing to rest once and for all when he starts regretting something, in particular making Saul king.
Right, and why does he regret it? Because when he tells Saul to wipe out all the Amalekites, he lets a few of their cows live. And that's the last straw, damn it.
Unacceptable.
No surprise that Saul isn't exactly anxious to give back his supreme authority, so he tells Samuel to fuck off, and then God commands Samuel to go find David and anoint him king.
So Saul's all tormented by evil spirits, and his servants say, you know what helps with evil spirits? Liar playing. And you know who absolutely wails on a liar? David. Coincidence or terrible literary foreshadowing?
That David could finger a liar better than Martha Stewart Selmy. Better than Lance Armstrong giving himself a steroid suppository. He could finger a liar better than a Jewish witness at Nuremberg.
David goes to pluck Saul's lyre, and apparently he's quite nimble indeed, because Saul keeps him on to carry his armor. Wink, wink, yeah, nudge, nudge, right. Say no more.
Then in 17 we get David and Goliath, where, spoiler alert, David kills Goliath with a slingshot.
Right, and now Saul's worried that David will take his job, so he makes him his right-hand man, tries to spear him a couple of times, and then sells his daughter for 100 Philistine foreskins.
Now, you always hear people using the phrase bag of dicks rhetorically or metaphorically. But at some point, this guy was very literally carrying a fairly sizable bag of dicks, like back from a battlefield.
Ouch.
You know, David got cocky and he came back with 200
right.
foreskins.
Yeah.
Probably grabbed entire dicks first, then did the individual brisses later. It just makes sense that way.
Meanwhile, David's kicking ass left and right. His armies are whipping way more Philistine ass than anybody else's, so Saul gets even more jealous.
Yeah, they even wrote a song about how David was an entire order of magnitude better at genocide than Saul.
Right. So after the third or fourth time Saul tries to spear David, he says, you know, I think the guy who keeps lunging at me spear first is trying to kill me, so he escapes.
This is a crafty one.
So he goes and finds Samuel, and they get together and cast some kind of frenetic nakedness spell where anybody who tries to come get David strips and falls into a prophetic frenzy.
Right, okay.
I'm not really sure what that means, but it sounds like a lot of fun.
Chapter 20, I'm pretty sure we confirmed that David and Saul's son Jonathan were indeed gay lovers, just in case the butt sex scenes were a little ambiguous.
So David finds a priest and asks him for some bread. He says he doesn't have any normal bread, but he does have a little magical abstinence bread for him.
Oh, hello, random Zelda apothecary, selling exactly the items I might need for my quest here. Got any food for celibate fugitives? Maybe a mythical weapon, you know, ideally formerly owned by my legendary vanquished nemesis, please? Oh, you got Hanzo swords too? Wicked!
So David and his men are hiding in a cave one day, Saul and his men are closing in, and then Saul steps into some random cave to take a shit, just so happens to be the cave that David and his men are in.
Blah, ooh, blah, blah.
Yeah, but David can't bring himself to kill Saul because he loves him ever so much. So he just fires his gun in the air and goes, oh! You know, the biblical equivalent thereof.
Right.
What kind of crazy, intense shit was he taking, though, that he didn't notice another entire human being standing right next to him, sawing off a square of his clothing?
And then Samuel dies. There's still 6 chapters and a whole other book named after this dude, and he doesn't even have the decency to live through them all.
Weak sauce.
Right.
Then the Philistines amass a huge army. Saul's all like, God, what do I do? But God won't answer him or return an image. His text or anything.
And then we get our first biblical seance, which, if I'm not mistaken, and I probably am, but if I'm not mistaken, this is the first real mention of an afterlife that we get in this whole book.
It's true.
Strange that that wouldn't be like kind of a focus up to this point.
Yeah, you knew Samuel was going to Obi-Wan Kenobi his way back into the story somehow.
Right, so the ghost of Sammy Boy shows up and tells Saul he's fucked.
All right, then you get some typical Bible stuff again. Rape, plunder, evil Amalekites, village pillage. So everybody's pissed and starts yelling at David. He says, everybody shut up, I know exactly what to do. Bring me the prayer smock. So he wears the magical ephod apron thing, assless, I believe. And God tells him they'll succeed in recovering their rape victims, if that's really what they want. And they might even get some 50 shekel checks out of the whole ordeal. So, you know, could work out all right.
And in the Proto-Empire Strikes Back ending, this book wraps up with Saul falling in battle along with all of his heirs, the Israelite armies getting massacred, and all the promised land falling into enemy hands.
Damn, do I hope 2 Samuel doesn't have Ewoks.
Me too.
Well, I guess we'll answer those questions and many more in the next installment of The Holy Babel, which, thank God, won't happen for 3 weeks. Thanks again, Heath, Lucinda.
Holy Babel, woo!
Babylon.
Before we put a lid on this thing tonight, I wanted to make a quick announcement that should be accompanied by a chorus of angelic trumpets. We did get the Cafe Press Shop up and running this weekend. It's a little messy in there, but when I find some time this weekend, we'll be getting it organized. We got the lovely Scarlet A logo slapped on everything from t-shirts to iPhone covers to shot glasses to Christmas ornaments to bumper stickers, so you can show your filthy monkey heritage with pride everywhere you go. We're going to be adding new products and t-shirt designs throughout the season, so be on the lookout for that. You're going to find a link to our online shop on the homepage, or you can just cut out the middleman and go straight to cafepress.com/scathingatheist. I also wanted to make a quick correction to last week's calendar section. I mentioned the upcoming and stupendously awesome Skepticon, but I said it was going to be in Springfield, Illinois. I fucked that up. It's Springfield, Missouri, not Springfield, Illinois. It's also not Springfield, Florida, or Springfield, Kentucky, or Springfield, South Dakota, or Springfield, Oregon, Tennessee, Michigan, Minnesota, Ohio, Georgia, Massachusetts, or Nebraska, all of which actually exist, by the way. But they aren't where Skepticon 6 is going to be. It's going to be in Springfield, Missouri. So know your Springfields, and sorry that I didn't. I also wanted to add a quick addition to last week's calendar. If you're going to be in the San Antonio area on November 12th, you can catch Executive Director of the Council for Secular Humanism, Tom Flynn, at an event sponsored by the San Antonio Coalition of Reason and the Free Thought Association of Central Texas. Great acronym, by the way. You'll find links to the event page on the show notes for this episode. Need to very quickly thank all the many people who make this podcast work every week. Huge thanks to Heath, Lucinda, and of course Sam for providing this week's Farnsworth quote. Oh, and a huge thanks to everybody who tweeted at Ricky Gervais trying to get him to do a Farnsworth quote. No response yet, but keep up the good work. You'll be rewarded for it in the no afterlife. But most of all, of course, I need to thank this week's most irreplaceable expressions of genetic code, Michael, Mike, Josh, Ryan, and Matthew. Michael, whose blood is so pure mosquitoes cut it with baking soda. Mike, whose mind is so sharp it splits neutrinos. Josh, whose wisdom is so great that he reeled at the thought of splitting neutrinos. Ryan, whose penis is so massive it bends light. And Matthew, whose confidence is so great that he doesn't need any of my over-the-top platitude bullshit. These 5 fine fellow free thinkers have gone above and beyond the high water mark for human decency this week by giving us money. Not everybody has the compassion, the integrity, and the raw sexual magnetism required to give us money, but if you think that you can handle the enormous pressure such heroic acts often entail, you'll find the donate button on the right side of our homepage at scathingatheist.com. And you should really donate because we just found out our cat has diabetes and Lucinda's pretty bummed about it. It's really expensive and people giving her money makes her happy. And unfortunately, we're out of time, so I can't remind you to give our show a 5-star review on iTunes, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to us on YouTube, listen to us on Stitcher, and tell your friends about us. But don't worry, I'm sure I'll have time to tell you that stuff next week. If you have questions, comments, or death threats, you'll find the contact info on the contact page at skatingatheist.com. All the music used in this episode was written and performed by yours truly, and yes, I did have my permission.
Game show host voice segment. It's Thursday, it's Halloween, and blah blah blah, chicken abortions. Blah blah blah.